Chapter 17, The Sixth Question. Can I access universal cooperation in shedding old habits? Quote, the mystical techniques for achieving immortality are revealed only to those who have dissolved all ties to the gross worldly realm of duality, conflict, and dogma. As long as your shallow worldly ambitions exist, the door will not open. Unquote. And that's from Lao Tzu. As we move to conquer limitations, we're now going to switch from an intellectual approach to a spiritual one. Why? Because self-defeating habits and their accompanying excuses are the province of the ego, the part of us that has edged God out. Convinced that our identity is only of this earth, most of us are controlled and manipulated by ego's false interpretation of who we are. And as Lao Tzu reminds us in the quote above, as long as we're tied to shallow ambitions in the material world, we're going to continue to be slavishly tied to old habits. When you ask yourself this sixth question, can I access universal cooperation in shedding old habits? You begin to apply the mystical principles of higher consciousness to your life. Step by step, you dissolve the belief that you're exclusively tied to this material world. Even taking hesitant little baby steps will allow you to open the door to an amazing new experience. Take a moment to review what your intellect has learned from the excuses be gone paradigm, and then trust that any help you need is forthcoming. When you completely relinquish the notion that you're separate from the mind of the universe, when you're in a God-realized or a Tao-centered place, this is the point where you bid farewell to excuses. Accessing universal cooperation. The moment has come for you to recover your original pure insight, the clarity and the light that are within you now, as they always have been. Enlightenment means that you access that light within you, which is where you find divine guidance. Now is the time to surrender your worldly ambitions and turn yourself over to that guidance. The source of all creation is pure energy, completely devoid of material form. You came from this source, and you will return to it, as I've spoken about frequently in this program. You don't have to physically die in order to access its unlimited power. You only need to become more like it. Your source of being recognizes only that which it is. So when you're unlike your source, or God, or the Tao, or the universal mind, or spirit, that's when you're dominated by ego and think that you need all of its excuses. Yet Lao Tzu warns you at the beginning of this chapter that the mystical techniques for accessing divine guidance cannot and will not be revealed when you edge God out. Imagine a fish that lives 5 miles below the surface of the ocean. It has never seen light, has no experience of what air is, has no eyes, and thrives in an atmosphere so pressurized that it would squash any creature who lives above the surface. Now imagine that deep-sea fish communicating with a bird that's flying 5 miles above this creature's place of residence. You can see how unlikely this would be, since the sea creature can't recognize something that's in a separate reality system. Likewise, your source of being knows nothing of struggle, hatred, revenge, frustration, fear, tension, or excuses. These are all inventions of the ego. When you behave in ways that are separate and distinct from your source, it can't communicate with you. Since conflict and excuses require duality, you can't access a source that only knows oneness when you come to it in conflict or with excuses about why you aren't all that you were intended to be. In order to access the infinite power of the Tao, you must become more and more like God. In other words, you must move into the space where you experiment with thinking and acting like you imagine God does, and suspend your intellect. The law of attraction proclaims that like is attracted to like. So when you think like the universal mind thinks, it will join you. When you think in ways that are antithetical to this divine mind, you'll attract more of what you're thinking about. That means that if your thoughts are all focused on what's wrong, or what's missing, or what you can't do, or what you've never done before, that is, on excuses, you'll access more of what you're thinking about. Use the law of attraction to say goodbye to excuses. When you do, the universe will recognize you, and help and guidance will show up in a synchronistic way. As you align with your authentic, original self, rather than your ego, you'll start to feel as though you're collaborating with destiny. Aligning with Source in your thoughts and actions. If you attempt to figure out how your source of being thinks, the first thing you need to do is get rid of the ego. When you observe how creation takes place, you see that source energy is all about giving, while your ego is all about getting. So aligning with source energy means taking the focus off of what's in it for me and shifting to how may I serve. When you say gimme, gimme, gimme to the universe, it uses the law of attraction to say gimme, gimme, gimme right back to you. You subsequently feel pressured, put upon, and out of sorts because so many demands are being made of you. It's out of this vortex that you create excuses that only serve to keep you stuck and striving to meet the ego's demands. I'm not strong enough, I don't deserve it, I don't have the energy, I'm scared, it's too big, and on and on. All of this stems from identifying with the false self that edged God out of your deliberations. Shift to a new alignment now, one that puts you in rapport with the creative universal mind. You can begin by thinking like God and follow up acting like God. Take the focus off of gimme, 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 and place it on how may I serve? What may I offer? How can I help? When you do, the universe will respond similarly, asking, how may I serve you? What may I offer you? How can I help you? This is when the ego's old habits fall away and are replaced by unexpected meaningful events, with the right people and circumstances and funding appearing. Lao Tzu comments on the magic of this process. Quote, if you wish to become a divine immortal angel, then restore the angelic qualities of your being through virtue and service. This is the only way to gain the attention of the immortals who teach the methods of energy enhancement and integration that are necessary to reach the divine realm. These angelic teachers cannot be sought out. It is they who seek out the student. Unquote. The way to get to the point where you've abolished old habits and excuses is to petition the divine realm and restore the angelic qualities of your being. Restoring is crucial, for when you begin to think like God thinks, you actually are returning to your source of being without having to die. I can't emphasize enough here that you don't attract what you desire. You attract what you are. Once again, I turn to Lao Tzu, who concludes the passage quoted above with this. Quote, when you succeed in connecting your energy with the divine realm through high awareness and the practice of undiscriminating virtue, the transmission of the ultimate subtle truths will follow. This is the path that all angels take to the divine realm. Unquote. That is to say that you can't just wish for a change or simply think about what you want and expect it to appear. To see the old habits fall away and access divine guidance in making your life work at the highest levels of happiness, success, and health, you must forget about what's in it for you and start practicing higher awareness by serving and wanting even more for others than you want for yourself. Otherwise, you'll never experience the subtle joy of a blissful, fulfilled life. As Lao Tzu says, this is the only way. You can't demand guidance. It will come when you align as your source is aligned. Then, and only then, as you live and practice the virtues, you'll gain the attention of the immortals. Otherwise, I repeat, that the door absolutely will not open. Living the virtues. Some 2,500 years ago, Lao Tzu spoke of the four cardinal virtues and noted that when we practice them as a way of life, we come to know and access the truth of the universe. These four virtues don't represent external dogma, but a part of our original nature. By practicing them, we realign with Source and access the powers that Source energy has to offer. According to the teachings of Lao Tzu, the four cardinal virtues represent the surest way to leave habits and excuses behind and reconnect to your original nature. That is, the way you were before acquiring physical form and the way you will be when you leave your physical self. The more your life is harmonized with the four virtues, the less you're controlled by the uncompromising ego. And when your ego is tamed, you discover how easy it is to access divine guidance. You and the divine begin to operate on the same frequency. As you contemplate your life without excuses, you leave the ego part of you in the dust. What follows are the four virtues and how they manifest, along with a brief description of how they relate to your commitment to live an excuses-begone life. The first cardinal virtue, reverence for all life. This is number one because it is the key to diminishing the ego. The source of being is the source of all beings, including our planet and our universe, and it doesn't create that for which it has no reverence. Since the Tao, or God, is in the business of creating and allowing, why would it create anything that is unlike itself, or even worse, something that it despises? To that end, the first cardinal virtue manifests in your daily life as unconditional love and respect for all beings in creation. This includes making a conscious effort to love and respect yourself, as well as to remove all of the judgments and criticisms from those early memes and mind viruses. Understand that you are a piece of God, and since you must be like what you came from, you are lovable, worthy, and godlike. Affirm this as often as you can, for when you see yourself in a loving way, you have nothing but love to extend outward. And the more you love others, the less you need old excuse patterns, particularly those relating to blame. Excuses originate in a false belief that the universe and its inhabitants aren't there for you. The notion that they're obstacles inhibiting you from living at your highest levels of success, happiness, and health is based on an inauthentic premise. As you adopt this first cardinal virtue, allow yourself to see others as willing to assist you in maximizing your human potential. The more reverence you have for yourself and for all of life, the more you see everyone and everything as willing assistants rather than inhibitors to your highest life. As Patanjali put it so succinctly several thousand years ago, quote, "When you are steadfast in your abstention of thoughts of harm directed toward others, all living creatures will cease to feel enmity in your presence," unquote. The key here is to stay so steadfast that you seldom, if ever, slip from this first cardinal virtue. The second cardinal virtue, natural sincerity. This virtue manifests itself as honesty, simplicity, and faithfulness, and is summed up by the popular reminder to be true to yourself. Using an excuse to explain why your life isn't working at the level you'd prefer isn't being true to yourself. When you're completely honest and sincere, excuses don't even enter the picture. The second virtue involves living a life that reflects choices that come from respect and affection for your own nature. Ralph Waldo Emerson described the significance of sincerity in an 1841 essay, The Oversoul, quote, "Deal so plainly with man and woman as to constrain the utmost sincerity and destroy all hope of trifling with you. It is the highest compliment you pay," unquote. And the great Albert Schweitzer once observed that sincerity is the foundation of the spiritual life. Make truth your most important attribute. Walk your talk, that is, become sincere and honest in all that you say and do. If you find this to be a challenge, take a moment to affirm, "I no longer need to be insincere or dishonest. This is who I am, and this is how I feel." From now on, when you make a commitment, do everything in your power to live up to what you've promised. Remember that when you're living your life from the perspective of your truest nature, you connect to Source. And as Schweitzer said, this is the very foundation of the spiritual life. As you work at being totally honest with yourself and others, those old self-defeating habits no longer crop up. When you know and trust yourself, you also know and trust the divinity that created you. That means if you want to live in the mountains or by the ocean, so be it. You know it's your soul calling you to live harmoniously within your true nature. If you love sculpting and no one else gets it, so be it. If you want to be a triathlete, a ballet dancer, a hockey player, or a trapeze artist, so be it. If you live from honesty, sincerity, and faithfulness to the callings of your spirit, you'll never have occasion to use excuses. This is the significance of the second cardinal virtue offered by Lao Tzu, a mighty tool that you can employ as you work your way through the excuses-begone paradigm. The third cardinal virtue, gentleness. This virtue personifies one of my favorite and frequently employed maxims. That is, when you have the choice to be right or to be kind, always pick kind. So many of your old thinking habits and their attendant excuses come out of a need to make yourself right and others wrong. When you practice this third virtue, you eliminate conflicts that result in your need to explain why you're right. This virtue manifests as kindness, consideration for others, and sensitivity to spiritual truth. Gentleness generally implies that you no longer have a strong ego-inspired desire to dominate or control others, which allows you to move into a rhythm with the universe. You cooperate with it, much like a surfer who rides with the waves instead of trying to overpower them. I recommend that you look very closely at your relationships and find out how much of your energy is directed toward dominating and controlling rather than accepting and allowing. As you develop this virtue, the pronoun I ceases to be the center of your communication. Instead of insisting, "I've told you so many times how to deal with those frustrating and rude people," you're more likely to say, "You're really having a tough day. Is there anything I can do to help?" Beginning a sentence with I implies the need to control. Beginning a sentence with you on the other hand, expresses kindness and consideration for the other person. The more kindness and sensitivity you extend to everyone in your life, the less likely you are to blame others for not living up to your expectations. Gentleness means accepting life and people as they are, rather than insisting that they be as you are. As you practice living this way, blame disappears, and you enjoy a peaceful world, not because the world has changed, but because you adopted this third cardinal virtue of gentleness. The fourth cardinal virtue, supportiveness. This virtue manifests in your life as service to others without any expectation of reward. Once again, when you extend yourself in a spirit of giving, helping, or loving, you act as God acts. As you consider the many excuses that have dominated your life, look carefully at them. You'll see that they're all focused on the ego. I can't do this. I'm too busy or too scared. I'm unworthy. No one will help me. I'm too old. I'm too tired. It's all me, me, me. Now imagine shifting your attention off of yourself and asking the universal mind, how may I serve? When you do so, the message you're sending is, I'm not thinking about myself and what I can have or can't have. Your attention is on making someone else feel better. Anytime you're supportive of others, you automatically remove ego from the picture. And with no ego, you go from edging God out to being more like God. When you think and act this way, the need for excuses evaporates. Practice giving and serving without expectation of reward, or even a thank you. Let your reward be spiritual fulfillment. This is what Khalil Gibran meant when he wrote in the Prophet, quote, there are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward, unquote. The greatest joy comes from giving and serving, so replace your habit of focusing exclusively on yourself and what's in it for you. When you make the shift to supporting others in your life without expecting anything in return, you'll think less about what you want and find comfort and joy in the act of giving and serving. It's so simple. No focus on yourself equals no excuses. The four cardinal virtues are a roadmap to the simple truth of the universe. Remember what Lao Tzu offered you 500 years before the birth of Christ. Quote, these four virtues are not an external dogma, but a part of your original nature, unquote. To revere all of life, to live with natural sincerity, to practice gentleness, and to be in service to others, is to replicate the energy field from which you originated. Now what I'm going to do is take you back through the list of the 18 excuse categories to see how they evaporate if you live the four virtues and consequently access universal cooperation. Excuse number one, it will be difficult. Accessing universal cooperation. Excuse number one becomes, with God, all things are possible. Excuse number two, it's going to be risky, becomes, I cannot fail when I trust in the wisdom that created me. Excuse number three, it will take a long time, becomes, there is only now. I live fully in the present. Excuse number four, there will be family drama, becomes, my inner callings are the voice of God. I must follow what I feel so deeply. Excuse number five, I don't deserve it, becomes, everyone deserves the grace of the Tao. Excuse number six, it's not my nature, becomes, my nature is to have reverence for all of life, to be sincere, gentle, and supportive to all. Excuse number seven, I can't afford it, becomes, if I stay in God realization, all that I need will be provided. Excuse number eight, no one will help me, becomes, how may I serve others so that they may have what I desire? Excuse number nine, it has never happened before, becomes, I am content with all that has shown up in my life. Excuse number 10, I'm not strong enough, becomes, I know that I'm never alone. I will reach out to others who are not as strong as I am. Excuse number 11, I'm not smart enough, becomes, I trust in the divine omniscient intelligence to which I am always connected. Excuse number 12, I'm too old or not old enough, becomes, in an infinite universe, age is an illusion. There is only now. Excuse number 13, the rules won't let me, becomes, I live by the four cardinal virtues. Excuse number 14, it's too big, becomes, if I can conceive of it, passion and the abilities to create it will be given. Excuse number 15, I don't have the energy, becomes, There is an energy in the universe greater than me, and that energy is always available. Excuse number 16, it's my personal family history, becomes everything that has ever happened to me was perfect, and I can learn and grow from it. Excuse number 17, I'm too busy, becomes with infinite patience, I produce immediate results. And excuse number 18, I'm too scared, becomes there is nothing to fear. I am an infinite expression of God, the Tao. This sixth question in the Excuses Be Gone paradigm is designed to assist you into a Tao-centered, God-realized pattern. As you've seen in this chapter, old thinking habits die quite readily when you get your ego out of the way and live by the four cardinal virtues. Without even trying, a need for defensiveness and justification disappears as soon as you reach out to others and take responsibility for everything that occurs in your life. Suggestions for applying the sixth paradigm question. First, practice one of the virtues daily and take note of how it decreases your tendency to focus only on yourself. When you find yourself slipping back into old, habitual ways of being, use the moment to concentrate on unconditionally loving someone else. Then notice that the old thinking habits and excuses are no longer present. Keep in mind that these four cardinal virtues represent the real you, the being you were prior to developing the false self or the ego. Notice how naturally good you feel when you're demonstrating reverence for everyone, natural sincerity, gentleness, and supportiveness. That's because you're in harmony with your source of being. All that it takes to remove an old self-defeating habit is returning to your original nature in the moment. And then dissolve as many ties to the gross worldly realm of conflict and dogma as you can. Recall how Lao Tzu suggested by doing so, you'll see the door open to universal cooperation. Stop identifying yourself on the basis of what you have, whom you're superior to, what position you've attained, and how others view you. See yourself rather as a piece of God, willing to act as close to that consciousness as possible. When you desire something, try wanting it more for someone else than you do for yourself. In fact, act to make it happen for them before you even think about yourself. Or if you're about to be critical or unkind to anyone, remind yourself that your original nature is gentle. Imagine yourself in a formless world about to transform into a material being. That state of non-being is who you were before you cultivated ego and began the process of edging God out. The way to access universal cooperation in shedding old habits is to realign with your original nature in all of your thoughts. Think like God thinks. Practice the virtues in all of your thoughts and behaviors and devote yourself to living a selfless life. It cannot fail you. Your habits will dissolve and your excuses will surely be gone. Chapter 18, the seventh question. How do I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Quote, the mind is indeed restless, Arjuna. It is indeed hard to train. But by constant practice, the mind in truth can be trained. When the mind is not in harmony, this divine communion is hard to attain. But the man whose mind is in harmony attains it, if he knows and if he strives. Unquote. That's Lord Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita. When they're next to each other, the number 1 and the number 8, which is the symbol of infinity, signify one infinite source. I invite the symbolic nature of the number 18 to inspire this final chapter of Excuses Be Gone, along with the last question of our paradigm shift. In Hebrew, the number 18 signifies life. There are also 18 holes on a golf course, which can't simply be an accident, can it? The Tao Te Ching contains 81 chapters, and many believe that it was contemporaneously written with the Bhagavad Gita, the ancient Hindu holy book that just happens to have 18 chapters. The Bhagavad Gita details the conversation between Krishna, an avatar of the god Vishnu, and the spiritual warrior Prince Arjuna. The quote that opens this chapter comes when Krishna, who is disguised as a charioteer, gives advice to Arjuna as he's preparing to go into another huge battle. Elsewhere in this iconic volume, Krishna instructs, quote, give not your love to this transient world of suffering, but give all your love to me. Give me your mind, your heart, all your worship. Long for me always. Live for me always, and you shall always be united with me. Unquote. This is the essential message of Excuses Be Gone. Unite with God, the Tao, universal mind or source. and trust in this wisdom, which is your original nature. Know your original nature so that you can intuitively turn your awareness away from this transient world when necessary. Then you don't need or want self-defeating habits or excuses. Krishna reminds you that with constant practice, your mind can be trained to overcome any habits of thought. The key is with constant practice, and that's the affirmative answer to this seventh and final question: how do I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Practice the essence of excuses be gone daily or even hourly, particularly the seven questions comprising the paradigm. When you do, before long, you'll find yourself running those seven questions through your mind in a matter of moments, and you'll come out on the other side of an old habit with a new way of thinking and acting and being. Learning to overcome excuses involves training your mind to become harmonious or at one with your source. As Krishna says above, when the mind is not in harmony, this divine communion is hard to attain, but the man whose mind is in harmony attains it, if he knows and if he strives. Unquote. The remainder of this chapter focuses on suggestions for staying in harmony with your source of being. Thinking like God thinks is essential for all of your practice, not so much to learn new techniques for overcoming excuses, but to keep you consciously connected to source and detached from the material world as much as possible. In this way, you'll let the angelic realm guide you through all of the doors that will now be opening for you. 9 ways to reinforce your new way of being. Throughout this entire program, you've had the opportunity to examine the many ways your mind has learned self-sabotaging thoughts. You learned how those bad habits became a familiar reality system for you, with a catalog of excuses explaining why you abandoned your original nature in favor of edging God out. Now, however, you're freeing yourself of those excuses by training your mind to welcome and cultivate your original spiritual nature. Each of the 7 principles for living an excuse-free life, as well as the 7 components of the new paradigm, are directed toward the message Krishna imparts to Arjuna. When you get your mind into harmony with Source, there will never be a need for bad habits or excuses again. As he states in the Bhagavad Gita, quote, "Even the worst sinner becomes a saint when he loves me with all his heart. This love will soon transform his personality and fill his heart with peace profound. O son of Kunti, this is my promise. Those who love me, they shall never perish. Still your mind in me, still yourself in me, and without doubt you shall be united with me." Unquote. So here are 9 suggestions for uniting with your source and living from that place. Number 1. Know it. As Krishna tells Arjuna, your mind can be trained if you know that you and your source cannot be separated. This knowledge is so close, it's only a thought away. Knowing is like having a private room that contains all the answers you need, and only you have the entrance key. Since it's in you, you can go there at any time, and no one can prevent you from what it contains. The moment your sense of knowing dissolves, however, old habits and a ton of excuses inundate you. When you're aligned with your source, you're guided by the greatest good. Without that alignment, your source and guidance don't tend to get involved with the way you choose to live your life. Create your own space where you're aligned with source, then ego and doubt can't enter. Always keep in mind that no single person, place, or thing can force you to believe or disbelieve anything. Perhaps that was true when you were a child, but not now. Now you've got the independence to choose what you believe. Your knowing is yours. Here's how I speak to myself about my own knowing. Quote, "A sacred place is within me that contains a knowing. I go there frequently, and I don't allow doubt into that divine inner dwelling. It's mine and mine alone, and I share it with my source of being. It is to this knowing that I retreat whenever I find myself slipping into excuse habits. In this knowing space within, I have no doubt about the guidance that's available to me when I'm unified with my source. I know that the doors will remain closed and the angelic teachers will not seek me if I'm only attached to this corporeal world of conflict, material things, and judgment. I keep this knowing space sacred for the moments when old habits and excuses attempt to influence my life." Be aware how significant this doubtless knowing is for living an excuse-free life. Number 2. Act as your source would in every instant. From this place of inner knowing where doubt is banished, ask, "What would God do right now?" Or if you conceptualize God as love, ask, "What would love do right now?" If you're ever perplexed by your habitual thoughts, asking this question will serve as a way to reinforce that there's an alternative. When you ask what God or love would do, you attract the source energy that was lost in your voyage from childhood ego development to the present. As I was writing this section, the sound of a chainsaw cutting a cement pole in half permeated my writing space, and my habituated way of thinking began to surface. I felt so resentful toward the noise pollution that I thought about quitting for the rest of the day, with the built-in excuse of, how can I write with all of this shrieking noise? It's their fault, it's not mine. But I decided to reinforce the excuses begone way of being by asking, what would God do? Then I sat down, dismissed my judgmental notions, and let myself be in peace. Within a few moments, I chose to ignore the sound and write anyway, imagining the chainsaw noise as music to accompany me. 5 minutes later, the noise was gone, and I'd sent an excuse packing by being in a God-realized space instead of continuing on with an old, ego-dominated inner dialogue. Number 3. Initiate a conversation with your habitual mind. As you work to overcome your self-created limitations, talk to your subconscious, telling it that instead of reacting, you're now going to respond with conscious choices. This will work rather quickly for you if you're serious about breaking a pattern. Awareness of feeling locked into automatic reactions along with a serious commitment to change will allow you to choose a new response. This is what happened with my 30-year habit of drinking caffeinated diet soda. Until that day in 1985, when I chose to break this habit, I drank 6 to 8 cans of carbonated brown water every day. I'd certainly been living at what I called the reaction level, with excuses to explain and fortify why I did this. So I made a commitment to myself to change. I knew I wanted freedom from the chemicals that dominated my life so much that I was seldom without a can of them in my hand. And this became much more important to me than continuing down my well-trod path. I became vigilant about noticing my subconscious pattern. As soon as I caught myself reaching for a soda, I'd stop myself and substitute a conscious response that aligned with my commitment. By the same token, if you want to break a pattern, you need to truly commit and then start conversing with your habitual mind. You'll be amazed at how fast the excuses disappear. Number 4, get quiet. Decide to reduce the noise level of your life. Noise is a distraction to your highest self because it keeps your ego on red alert. Ways to discard habits along with their attendant excuses are often found in silence, in the void that's the creative source of all form. I've always loved Blaise Pascal's observation on this subject, quote, "I have discovered that all the unhappiness of men arises from one single fact, that they cannot stay quietly in their own chamber," unquote. And this is from a scientist. Another scientist, Albert Einstein, reminds us of the importance of noise reduction as we become more adept at outgrowing the habits of childhood. Quote, "I live in the solitude which is painful in youth, but delicious in the years of maturity," unquote. Adopting a similar attitude will help you reinforce your excuses begone life, so learn to take time each and every day for quiet contemplation. For example, when you're driving alone, turn off the constant chatter bombarding your inner world. Then when you arrive at your destination, honor the off button on the TV remote and honor the on button for your highest self. Try to make meditation a daily practice as well, even if only for a few moments. If you're unsure of how to begin, I've written a book called Getting in the Gap that comes with a CD to guide you in learning the meditation technique of Japa, which has been so extraordinarily helpful to me personally. This is how Carl Jung described what he felt in deep meditation. Quote, "Those inner states were so fantastically beautiful that by comparison this world appeared downright ridiculous. It is impossible to convey the beauty and intensity of emotion during those visions. They were the most tremendous things I have ever experienced." Unquote. Finally, while you're in that inner bliss-filled silence, let yourself be willing to simply ask. Just ask. A Course in Miracles points out that you do not ask too much. In fact, you ask too little. And of course, the Bible says, quote, "Ask, and it will be given to you," unquote. That's Mark 7:7. All creation stems from the void, the great silence. This includes the creation of a new you devoid of self-defeating thinking habits and accompanying excuses. As Swami Sivananda reminded his devotees, silence is the language of God. Ask in silence, listen in silence, and let silence be the jumping-off point for becoming one with the creative force of the universe. Number 5, re-energize your surroundings. The law of attraction works when you surround yourself with people who are on a spiritual path similar to your own. Remember, this law states that like is attracted to like, so you attract source energy to you by being like it. Similarly, when you're continually in the company of low energy, angry, depressed, shaming, hateful people, you'll probably find life a little more challenging. It was said of Jesus that when he entered a village, the population would be elevated just by his presence. No one could bring him down. Become more Christ-like yourself by remembering that no one can bring you down because of his or her low energy. If people around you are angry or depressed and you feel drained emotionally, it's your responsibility to allow yourself to create the right energy for you. You don't have to join them in their negativity. Stay in your place of peace, regardless of how tempting it may be to lash out or to argue. Practice Lao Tzu's four cardinal virtues and keep your environment as pure and free from negativity as you possibly can. Literally and metaphorically, turn off any medium that broadcasts a litany of reasons to be depressed and frightened. Make your home a temple of kindness and love. Stay away from places that thrive on loud noise or alcohol consumption or smoking and insensitivity. Pay attention to the music you listen to, the art you view, even the arrangement of your furniture and flowers, all of it. The more peaceful and loving your environment and the people in it, the more you're in a serene place where excuses aren't on the agenda. This is the environment in which self-defeating habits are most likely to fade from your consciousness. Further reinforce your new way of being by having your surroundings reflect the design of what you want your life to look like. In this energy, like-minded people will appear. Choose to be in the company of those who hold the space for you to achieve the joy of maximizing rather than minimizing your highest human potential. Number 6, get back to nature. When I'm on Maui writing, I make it a weekly practice to drive halfway around the island to a lush spot with a stunning waterfall that empties into a refreshing pool where I spend several hours swimming and meditating while the water cascades down on me. In those moments, it feels as if God has entered my consciousness and a rapturous feeling of contentment overwhelms me. This is a ritual I do just before beginning a new chapter, and it reconnects me to my source of inspiration. There's no confusion, no worry, no fear, nothing but pure ecstasy and a lightness of being. In these moments, which I cherish deeply, I receive the answers I seek not only for the writing I know I'll be doing in the next several days, but for my personal life as well. This setting that showcases nature's beauty is pure God in action. As I get quiet and listen, any self-limiting thoughts are simply impossible. I understand what my spiritual friend Thoreau meant when he wrote these words in 1854, explaining why he chose to live in nature at Walden Pond. Quote, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, and when I came to die, discovered that I had not lived." Unquote. You will also find your answers in nature because God is nature, unspoiled, untended, alive in stillness, and teeming with life. When you're there, you'll begin to see the miraculousness of every cubic inch of space. You'll find the presence of an energy that you may have lost touch with in your daily life, and that energy is in you, just as it is in all of the flora and the fauna. The creative spirit of God or Tao is so easy to align with when you're in a natural, unpretentious setting. Just before writing this chapter, I trekked to the waterfall and the natural pool with someone I love, stood in the cool, flowing water, and ate guava fruit hanging from a branch above the surface. In those moments, everything I needed to say solidified. Excuses were out of the question, and I understood what Einstein wrote in his later years, quote, "I lived in solitude in the country and noticed how the monotony of a quiet life stimulates the creative mind," unquote. Number 7. Practice yoga. As I've mentioned earlier in this program, the meaning of the word yoga translates to union. The ancient rishis who gave us yoga considered stretching, balancing, and flexible exercising an opportunity to experience union with God. Such a union with the source of being wasn't a painful experience, since God was viewed as natural, peaceful, and gentle. In our Western world, the most popular exercise regimens involve some degree of harsh, vigorous, punishing, no pain, no gain activity. These include running or jogging, bicycling, aerobics, and weightlifting, particularly on complicated machines to add more muscle tone. Yoga, on the other hand, has no harshness to it. Yet even as you stay in a space the size of a small mat, you attain the same kind of benefit those other physical pursuits give you without the pain or exertion. Yoga is a great workout for the entire body, particularly the joints, muscles, and even internal organs, but especially for the mind. I practiced it almost every day for 4 years, and it's been a great healing factor in overcoming the aches and pains I inherited from 3 decades of daily running and weightlifting, along with the endless stopping and starting that accompanied years of competitive tennis. I once lived with chronic back pain for many, many years before I began my practice of a daily 90-minute class of Bikram hot yoga, and I'm happy to say that I've been pain-free for almost 4 years now. One of the most appealing features of yoga is that it's done in silence. The mind gets to stop all of its chatter and concentrate on union with God through specific asanas that are designed to align the body, mind, and spirit with the source of being. And that's why I included this little pitch for yoga in this program on eliminating excuses and bad thinking habits. This entire work has been about finding a way to reconnect to the Tao in all of our thoughts and actions. When you experience union, you let go of your ego and you no longer rely on excuses. In the 2nd century BC, Patanjali, who is often called the father of yoga, defined it this way, quote, "Yoga is the ability to direct the mind exclusively toward an object and sustain that direction without any distractions. Yoga is the control of the ideas in the mind," unquote. Now, this is precisely what an excuses-be-gone approach to life teaches. Control your mind, and everything will fall into place. Give yoga an honest 30-day trial. Notice how your body feels better all over, and your inclination toward excuses begins to dissipate as well. Number 8, make your number one relationship be with God. I know that you have many significant and important relationships, certainly the ones you enjoy with your children, parents, spouse, lover, significant other, co-workers, and best friends rate very high in your life. Here in this excuses be gone paradigm, however, I ask you to place your relationship to your source of being at the very top of this list. When this becomes your reality, you intuitively go to the silence within and remember to send your ego to a place where it doesn't interfere with your deliberations. Make your relationship to source your priority even if you declare yourself an atheist. When you go to this place within yourself, you don't need any religious orientation or belief in the supernatural. You needn't see God as a bearded old white man floating around in heaven awaiting your requests. You needn't believe in talking snakes and whales swallowing people and then spitting them out and God's only son being sacrificed by his father in order to save us, or boats with all creatures on board, including insects and dinosaurs, to assuage God's wrath with a flood that covers the earth. While these stories are fine, I have my own opinions on religious tales, as I'm sure you do. Rather, I ask you to think of God or the Tao or Divine Mind or Krishna or Source or any of the 1,000 names for God as love. Even the Bible itself states that, quote, God is love, unquote, as in 1 John 4, verse 8. And when Carl Jung was asked in an interview if he believed in God, he said these words, which reflect what I want to convey, quote, "I could not say I believe, I know. I have had the experience of being gripped by something stronger than myself, something that people call God," unquote. There's a loving energy in the universe that allows for the creation of all beings. It is a non-being without form or boundaries, and it does nothing while leaving nothing undone. Make this energy your primary relationship, above all others in your life, consulting it before anyone else. Retreat there in silence and listen, and know that this force is outside of you and within you. It's here that you will be guided to change self-defeating excuse patterns. By all means, love your family and everyone else on this planet. Treasure all of your relationships, but first and foremost, make your relationship to your highest self your priority. When you see God simply as love, there will be no room left for excuses and bad habits. You will only be able to give away the love that is your creative essence. I vividly recall reading an essay published in Time magazine by Patty Davis, the daughter of former President Ronald Reagan, describing her long battle with cocaine addiction. She wrote that she'd been clean for 5 years. The desire to take up the old habit was still very pronounced within her. She concluded her commentary by saying that, although the desire was still there and the memory of the euphoric feeling in her brain when she was on the drug was still enticing, she continued to stay away from this debilitating habit because she didn't want to disappoint God by returning to those old ways. This is what it means to make your relationship to God the supreme relationship. It seems that Patty Davis could handle disappointing her parents, her friends, and even herself, since she had done so many, many times. But she just couldn't go back to a state of being that was antithetical to source energy, because her primary relationship in life was now to God. And in all honesty, I must say that this is the reason I personally have never gone back to alcohol. As you can see, old habits disappear much more readily when you make your senior partner number one in your life. That's because your senior partner is pure love. And when you go there first, all that you could ever need is provided for you. And number 9, Work the paradigm. I close this chapter with a reminder to work the excuses be gone paradigm whenever and wherever you find yourself stuck in self-defeating thought patterns or behaviors. The paradigm can be applied at any time to any long-standing limitations that you want to change. When you notice that you've employed an excuse, just say these three words, work the paradigm. In a matter of moments, the old mental crutches will vanish. You can easily work the paradigm by quickly going through each of the seven questions and silently responding with short answers. When you notice that any question in the paradigm elicits a response that keeps the old excuse pattern activated, shift your answer so that it aligns with the highest vision that you have for yourself. This is a powerful act of changing the way you've allowed yourself to be conditioned to think. But it only works as long as you are honest and keep what you're doing a private matter between you and the highest part of yourself. I don't feel that there's any need for me to elaborate on the seven questions we've already looked at in such details. However, I would like to leave you with a brief summation of the essence of the excuses be gone paradigm, with a short response to each of these seven questions in the paradigm. Number one, is it true? Answer, probably not. Number two, where did the excuses come from? Answer, I allowed them. Question number three, what's the payoff? Answer, I get to avoid risks and stay the same. Question number four, what would my life look like if I couldn't use these excuses? Answer, I'd be free to be myself. Question, can I create a rational reason to change? Answer, easily. Question number six, can I access universal cooperation in shedding old habits? Answer, yes, by simply aligning with my source of being. And the last question, number seven, how can I continuously reinforce this new way of being? Answer, by being vigilant and working the paradigm. Correction, if you work the paradigm several times, you'll soon see where you're guiding your life with thoughts that aren't necessarily true. You'll be able to discern where those thoughts came from and what your life would look like without them. And then you create a rational reason to change them by accessing divine guidance through perfect union with your source of being. To be consciously merged into that perfect union with God is a feeling that's difficult to explain, but ego does now take a back seat. You know that you're allowing yourself to be guided by a force that's bigger than you are. Even if you so choose, you can stay infinitely connected to it. In this state of knowingness, excuses become a thing of the past. In 1851, Henry David Thoreau described his boyhood ecstasies in his journal, and his words take me back to my own boyhood ecstasies. I'm ending this very personal program with his observation because it is to those kinds of moments that I urge you to return to as well. Quote, there comes into my mind such an indescribable, infinite, all-absorbing, divine, heavenly pleasure, a sense of elevation and expansion, and I have naught to do with it. I perceive that I am dealt with by superior powers. This is a pleasure, a joy, an existence which I have not procured myself. I speak as a witness on the stand and tell what I have perceived. Unquote. I, too, perceive that I'm being dealt with by superior powers. I too speak to you as a witness, telling you what I have perceived. I too have felt the all-absorbing, divine sense of elevation that comes from living my life with a minimum of excuses. And as I conclude this labor of love, I wish for you to come to know the heavenly pleasures of living each and every day aligned with your source of being in such a way that you can shout out, excuses, I no longer need you in my life. So be gone.